How's it going? How you been?
Let's get started.
What's scrap, man?
Yo, yo.
You are now tuned in to Al Joe the Funk Master. Watch your grill, you'll get knocked out cold fast. And talking shit, now we talking facts. Where the mountain off the back, you in trouble, came to burst your bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about a double. This the weekly scraps, you don't need a map. GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I grow disease. Planet fuck a name and a fame, only legacy remains. Remember the name, Al Jermaine Sterling.
It ain't shit, it ain't safe.
Motherfucker.
Welcome back to the weekly scraps. Oh man, we had great fights this past weekend and I'm impressed. Very, very impressed. This card was not a pay-per-view card, obviously. And for a fight night, it really did deliver and gave us everything that we were expecting and more. And of course, we've seen some new potential title contenders in the wings, waiting, lurking, like hungry wolves waiting to attack on any given opportunity. So here I am back in Vegas and kind of got a little jet lag, kind of got a little beaten up from my flight, but it's all good. I'm here now and I got some training in. Right off the plane, about an hour and 15 minutes later, I'm hitting pads with Eric Nixick over at Extreme Couture. That was my Thursday arrival. And then Friday we did a little bit of, actually that wasn't Thursday, that was Friday. I left Friday morning. And so, wow. Man, I got my days all mixed up. I don't even know what day I left. Yeah, Thursday, that was Thursday. And then Friday, that was Thursday night when I got here. And then Friday morning, I did Eddie's class, 9 a.m. pro class, pro amateur class, I believe. And it's a bunch of striking, a lot of drills, switch stance stuff, and just figuring out some footwork and how to shift your body weight and put some power into your shots off of your footwork and your setups. So that was my Friday. And Friday night, I got to drill with DC. So that was pretty dope. Got to work with him a little bit, pick his brain on some stuff. And that was really cool. And Saturday morning, we did some sparring. I sparred with Kai Kamaka. My eye's still a little black from Marab catching me with his knuckle. I threw a spinning elbow and I stopped. You know, I got no padding on it, but I throw it in terms of showing it. I did it twice. The first time, fainted, level change, and then I came through, boom, and it stopped. But he knew, as he was throwing a punch, he knew. And, you know, you kind of acknowledge it, like, you know, give each other dap type of thing and stop. And I did it again, but the second time I did it, he didn't give a damn. He just threw a crazy big right hook, and it caught me right in the socket. So I stopped. So I paused. As I paused, I just get clapped. I'm like, oh my goodness. Of course, he said sorry, whatever. But obviously, it's training. You're throwing strikes like that. It's one. It's not a strike we really throw, or you should be throwing in training, because obviously you land a spinning elbow, that does big damage. So kind of my fault on that, but at the same time, still got to work out the kinks on these things. I got to set up my little traps. So that was my sparring session with him. So my eye's still a little black from that. Kind of got like a little ball in here floating. I've been trying to smooth it out. I got a little smaller since I've been playing with it, massaging it down. Kind of like any other lump you get in your face. But Saturday I got to spar with Kai Kamaka. We did three rounds. I felt extremely tired and I wasn't feeling like myself in terms of the cardio and conditioning that I knew I was in. So then the fourth round, we did a bonus round. I got through it. I pushed a pretty hard pace, a lot of footwork. I'm going to be on my bike a lot for this fight. And obviously, I'm going to be pushing the grappling, but if I can't get the fight to the ground right away, I got to make sure that I'm able to hit and keep stinging like a butterfly, floating like a bee. No, float like a butterfly, stinging like a bee. I was testing you guys. All right. But before we get into our breakdown, that was my week. Today's Monday now. Sunday, I did 10th Planet. Because obviously I took a couple of days off, so I wanted to get back into the swing of things and get this jet lag just off my back. I went with Gustavo, and we were flowing, but then he jumped on a guillotine twice and cranked my neck. And obviously he doesn't know that I have really bad neck issues, but Jesus, man, you think you're flowing and you're just kind of going through the motions trying to warm up. It was my second flow round, and I knew this only happens once I get my neck cranked on right away. And of course, it just happened to go down like that. So now my neck's super tight. It's hard for me to really turn my head to the left. Everything's like flared up right here. But I took a couple of ibuprofens, some Biofreeze and some stuff like that. So hopefully this is not a big issue. Today I can work at the PI. I'm gonna have them concentrate just on that upper back area, try to loosen everything back up. Cause this is super tight, man. It really does suck. I told him afterwards, I was like, dude, we could go again and roll, but we actually didn't end up rolling. I was like, whenever I roll, I just tap because I know my neck, you know, especially when it's not warmed up. And again, a flow roll is a flow roll. You're not really looking to like submit each other. But that felt like he was trying to submit me. Obviously, I don't think he was being malicious about it. I think he just didn't know. And yeah. Other than that, so that was my Sunday. I got some good work in. I think I got about 6 or 7 rounds in. I had to like do some intermittent rounds, like take one off and then come back for the next one. Just because I felt the flare up. So I had to like just stretch out, massage it a little bit, take it easy, and obviously be selective of who I was going with. There's a really good wrestler there named Jeffrey. He's a 55er. Got to go with him twice, actually 3 times. The third round was I just had him on my back. He has really good back control for a wrestler who said he wrestled on top. So that was really cool to have that and work on my escapes. So that was a little bit of a rough day. I mean, I had some good moments, and of course, I got beat up a little bit as well. So it's part of the game, but we'll be ready on the night. So before we get into our UFC Fight Night Vegas 18 card, I want to give a big shout out to our sponsors at Sleepy Bear and, of course, Everlast. Check them out, everlast.com. And you can check out sleepybeargummies.com. And my promo code for Sleepy Bear Gummies is Funkmaster. So go check those guys out, get your 20% off, and tell them I sent you. All right, so we'll start with the main event. Volkov versus Overeem, super, super impressive. Volkov did exactly what he wanted to do. Overeem could not get an opportunity to get started in the sense of he did land one big left hand from the southpaw position, and he went to the body and then tricked him and like tried to come over the top. Let me not say he went to the body. I think he went in for a shot, like a almost like feigning a takedown or a failed attempt at a takedown. Got stuff and then came back with the left hand over the top that cracked him, that cracked Volkov. But outside of that, that was like the one trick that landed pretty well. And then Volkov started to find a home for that 1-2 and especially that jab hand and busted up Overeem's nose. And from there, it just didn't seem like he could get back into the fight. He was bleeding all over the place and it just looked like it was just getting ugly. Normally, Overeem gets an opportunity to get the fight to the ground at some point. But Volkov is just a man child. I believe he's 6'7". And he wears it well, carries the weight well, not just like some big doofy guy. He's a big, giant, enormous man, and he's strong. He looks strong. He's filled out and proportioned, well proportioned. 6'7 with a reach of 81 inches. And how old is he now? He's 32 years old. They call him Drago. Drago! Overeem, 40 years old, 6'4". 80-inch reach, but obviously he's getting to that point of age where it's just like, man, these younger guys at this division, I know he wants to come back soon, he said, but I think it might be time to start thinking about some other things. Should have been thinking about some other things a couple years ago, in my opinion, not because of the fights, but because it's just the right thing to do so that you're not trying to scramble around all at the end of your career trying to figure out what it is that you love or you like to get into. So, I wish Overeem the best, man. You know, legend of a fighter. And Volkov got a huge win over him, big name. And it seemed like that was a theme, as people were saying, the legend killers. Obviously these guys are legends, but when you get to a certain age, you lose that mystique of who you were when you were younger. The shots you were able to take before, now you're not able to take anymore because of the wear and tear and the years of damage on your body. And as well, like your brain just somehow, some way, just seems like the chin isn't as durable as it used to be. Overeem is definitely one of those guys. And of course, segue into our next fight discussion is Frankie Edgar. Frankie Edgar fighting Corey Sandhagen, 39 years old, 5'6", I'm 5'7", with a 68-inch reach, and taking on Sandhagen, who I believe is 5'11". He's 28 years old, and he has a 70-inch reach. So, again, I just think when you get to a certain age, your chin just doesn't take punishment the way it used to. Frankie Edgar used to take some big damage, man, back in the days from those wars with Gray Maynard and Benson Henderson. But now, like I said, Father Time is undefeated, and he eventually catches everybody. And I'm not saying that's what happened with this. I'm saying in terms of your ability to take more punishment, Father Time catches up and wins every single time. The only way you can win is don't take the punishment. So it's easier said than done. But when you're fighting young killers like this who got good power, athletic, and they're hungry, these are the results that you're going to get. And I must say, beautiful flying knee for Corey Sandhagen, 28 seconds in. Now, here's my take. And I was talking a long ago about this, but he said he wasn't sure. I felt Edgar was trying to take the same approach that I took. Press Corey right away, keep him on his heels, take away his dynamic footwork and his movement. And it looked like it was good. The difference was, for me, in my opinion of what happened, Frankie level changes a lot, you know, when he's going to the body. That extra level change brings his chin that much closer down to a guy like Corey Sandhagen, who's all the way already up here, and all he needs to do is step and lift his knee, and he's going to crack you right on the chin. For this one, it wasn't a step and lifting knee. This was a flying knee. This was him propelling, and he said he used to play basketball. I listened to my opponent's interviews, and I heard he used to play basketball back in the day, I think in high school. So with that being said, seeing that, it really puts things in perspective in a couple of ways. Corey Sandhagen is really freaking good. I think I'm really freaking good. Three, I created a newer, more dangerous monster from my fight with Corey Sandhagen, to the point where this guy has put out two top five contenders, and at the same time, he did it with style points, and he's promising me a nap that he owes me. And I like being awake. I like napping at night on my own time, not in the octagon. I've done that before, and let's just say I don't plan on doing that ever again. Yeah, so those are the couple things. And again, like I said about Frankie Edgar and Father Time, Sandhagen is here to stay, and he's a very, very dangerous competitor. I think people need to take notice of a couple of things as well. Like I said before, I did that to him when he was still decimating guys. I know people can say he didn't get those finishes the way he did of late. You can say that. But he was still just as dangerous. He still was doing the same stuff. It just wasn't connecting. Now, attacks like that only need to connect one time. A spinning heel kick to the head only needs to connect one time. A flying knee to the chin only needs to connect one time. Where he's throwing it in these other fights, and he dropped guys. He dropped that guy, Mario Bautista. And these other fights, he's hitting guys. He clipped Rafael Sunsell, but the brunt of the knee did not hit flush like it did against Frankie Edgar. Coming in, level changing, it looked like he was going to go to the body or go in for a takedown, and caught him with his arms open, and it's just one of those things. And you have to keep those things in mind. It's like, yeah, he is still human. Yes, he is very dangerous, but yes, these things happen based on the situations and the setups that you allow and that you give to your opponent. Frankie has a good grappling. He's a good wrestler, strong wrestler. But my thing is, if he takes him Corey down, then what is it? Is it planning to hold him down? Because Corey's not terrible on the ground. He's got some competent jiu-jitsu down there. I think when you have a guy who's just good with back control and good with maintaining back control, that's a little bit of a different scenario. And that's where I come in. In this situation, we wanted to see if Corey can get back up after being taken down multiple times by Frankie Edgar. We didn't get to see that. We didn't get to have those questions answered for, no pun intended, for the later future of Corey Sandhagen and for Frankie Edgar, knowing what it's going to be for those guys going forward. That takes us to not knowing if Corey's takedown defense has improved. He is working with Carrington Banks, who wrestled D3. I remember him from the wrestling days when he wrestled at Warburg, and he is a very, very good wrestler, strong wrestler. So I would imagine that in the next couple of months, within the next year, Corey is going to be making some big leaps and gains in his grappling department. But that remains to be seen. He's still young, 28 years old, and he has the world at his fingertips right now. Again, I think I created a monster. I'm a proud dad. And same thing with Marlon Moraes. He created a monster. I made a mistake in that fight, and I learned from it. You don't fight with emotion. You don't fight with lack of setup. You don't fight with disregard and lack of appreciation for what your opponent brings to the octagon. That calls for a nap. That calls for bad things to happen to you. You have to be sharp. You have to be ready to fight. I think same thing happened with Sanhagen and his fight with me. Maybe he had a little bit of disregard to my jiu-jitsu and how good I actually am down there. Who knows? But fights happen. Every fight is different. And I look forward to the opportunity to fight in a guy like that again. If he doesn't get matched up, if they do decide to have him wait for the winner of myself and Jan, or if they decide to give him TJ Dillashaw, who I think needs to fight somebody. I don't know if he's fighting Jose Aldo. I don't know if they're going to make him fight Corey Sanhagen and make that the number one contender fight. So who knows? We're going to find out. So changing gears, the next couple of fights. I'm not going to talk about all these fights in depth. Just going to give out some key points and some things that I thought everyone did pretty, pretty well. Because I got to get going soon. It's early here. It's actually 8:13 in the morning. And I have to pick up my wrestling padding, so carpet padding for the mats. I gotta get the vapor barriers, I gotta get the carpet padding, and then I'm gonna lay the mats down and get my gym space set up so that I can do my own private workouts here and really focus on some special things that I wanna focus on for the fight, just in case of timing not working out at extreme couture, and just having that privacy and having that flexibility to do the workout where no one's watching but you and your guys. It's a pretty comfortable feeling, and obviously being uncomfortable, not knowing, not having anyone who's like recording shit when you're not watching, that type of stuff. That stuff pisses me off. It doesn't piss me off unless if I know what you're gonna do, it's not so bad. But if I don't know what you're gonna do, and I don't know who you are, you should not be doing that. That's just not cool at all. That's like just being a spy. Just weird. I don't know what you're gonna do with it. That's just the way I look at it. You might not be a spy. You might be a very nice person, just wanted for your archive. You should still ask, and it's still not cool unless the person gives you permission to do something like that. Next up, Clay Guida versus Michael Johnson. Looked phenomenal. I never seen Clay Guida look this good. Looked like he turned back the clock. Father time ain't got nothing on him. What is his age? He's 39 years old, about to be 40 years old. The Carpenter, 5'7", 70-inch reach advantage. Beat Michael Johnson in a way that I did not think. Striking. Obviously, the wrestling was a big part of it. But the wrestling attempts and the threat of, not even the wrestling attempts, but the threat, just knowing the threat going into this fight of the wrestling of Clay Guida on Michael Johnson's mind the entire time. Him biting on the fakes, him biting so hard that it opens up overhand rights and big right hooks from Clay Guida connecting time and time again. Super phenomenal. He looked like he was the one that was a striker in there until he started wrestling, of course, putting the pressure on Michael Johnson and relentlessly looking to take him down over and over and over again. I did send a tweet that I hope judges do realize that some of these takedowns and these positions are not technically takedowns. So if I shoot on you and I'm underneath you, like your back is against the cage, you're defending and I'm on your leg right here and I got your one ankle or both ankles and you're like chest wrapping me and you're kind of back over my back, your belly over my back with your back against the cage, that's not a takedown. But some people might consider that a takedown, which I think is the stupidest thing. You can't do anything from it. You have no control. The guy on top is still in control, or should I say still in a neutral position where it's 50-50, anything can happen. So when I see situations like that, it just annoys me because I feel like the judges sometimes are just giving it as a straight up takedown instead of looking at the situation from a wrestling scoring criteria, and you need 3 points to control. meaning you have to be behind. Your opponent has to be on two knees or one knee and a hand, some weight bearing type of thing, and you're behind them. If I just have you in a front headlock, it's not a takedown. But if I take you down, get behind you, and you reverse it or you try to escape, and then I get to a front headlock, it's still the same takedown. But now I have less of control. If that opponent gets to his feet, I lose control. The takedown is off now. Now there's no longer a takedown. There's no control. So that's why I think people need to pay a little bit more attention to the aspects of takedowns. And I think that's what makes me different. That's what makes a guy like Umar different. That's what makes a guy like Merab different. That's what makes a guy like Frank Yeager different. When we get those takedowns, we're looking to get into those dominant positions that we can control guys. Clay Guida did that. I'm not saying he didn't get takedowns. He got a lot of takedowns. I'm saying there was that one specific position, I believe it was in the second round, where he shot it. I was like, I tweeted it, but it came out a little too slow because I was still trying to explain what was going on. And then by the time then the position already moved on, and then he got the takedown. But yeah, that's the one time I was actually talking about. Michael Johnson, I'm not really sure where he goes from here. I believe he's only 34 years old. I like Michael MJ a lot, man. Cool ass dude. I think he changed his life around in terms of like partying and all that. Came from a small town out in, what was it? I think Louisiana? No, Missouri. St. Louis, Missouri. So it's not a small town, but he came from humble beginnings. And to get to the UFC where he is today and to make a name for himself is huge. Ultimate Fighter to multiple fights in the UFC. His record is 19-17, which is kind of crazy to see because he's a guy who beat three top five guys in the lightweight division at a point in his career where it was Dustin Poirier, Tony Ferguson, and Edson Barbosa. And for him to do something like that and then go on a skid where he loses four in a row, drops down to 145 and doesn't have success there and then comes back, it's pretty tough to watch because I like the guy. Not tough to watch in the sense that he sucks or anything like that, but it's just tough to watch because I like a guy like him and, you know, you want to see him do well, but obviously you can't help but like Clay Guida as well, but that's his fourth loss in a row. Josh Emmett, Stevie Ray, Thiago Moises, and Clay Guida. I don't know. He's got super fast hands. In my opinion, I just feel like the grind of the sport, he's just not all the way in tune with it anymore. He just doesn't seem like his heart's in it. Like, he really wants to fight or really wants to be in there. You haven't seen that killer instinct come from him. I will say in his Thiago Moises fight, he had a little bit more fire until he got taken down. And then it just seemed like once he got taken down, just kind of like got deflated. And I don't know. This fight, he just completely looked like he didn't really want to be in there at all. And I could be completely wrong. It's just, this is what I'm seeing from the body language. But again, congrats to Clay Guida. Big win for him and maintaining his win streak. His last one, I believe he beat Bobby Green. Let me verify. Wait, why doesn't he have a Tapology page? That's crazy. Guida, oh, there it is. Yeah, no, he lost to Bobby Green. A decision. So he lost to Jim Miller, then Bobby Green, and then just got a win from Michael Johnson. So, and before that, his last one was BJ Penn. That was 2019 in May. Next up, Alexander Pantoja versus Manel Capé. Manel Capé coming over from Ryzen, I believe. Now, I thought he performed pretty well. He's only 27 years old. He beat Kai Ascura. He beat Takei Mizugaki. He also beat Ian McCall. He lost to Asakura. He lost to Horiguchi, but beat Asakura back. Never got a chance to fight Horiguchi again, but got choked out with the head and arm. And he lost to our guy Oka Sasaki as well over in Ryzen. Yeah, Ryzen, yep. So he came over on a 3-fight streak, and I thought he did some good things. The one thing I will say was his output, so I definitely agree with Dominic Cruz and Daniel Cormier in highlighting that pretty much the last two rounds, just saying like, yo, this is a close fight, but Manel Capé is not going to win this if he doesn't up his output. He wasn't doing much, and I believe Capé trains out there because I saw a picture with Nick Piccinini, and he's saying he was with Capé, and I believe Piccinini is still training over there at DC's gym at AKA. So with that being said, I thought if he just upped the output, and it looked like he was very, very hesitant of being taken down from Pantoja, which I didn't understand because he was the one getting the clean takedowns and taking down Pantoja almost at will. Whenever he shot, he pretty much got a takedown every single time. So I was just kind of confused by that. Like, if you take him down, like, obviously you're not trying to open up with the hands for lack of you, for which seemed like you just didn't want to be taken down. So open up with your takedowns, put him down multiple times, secure the bag, get a couple of takedowns, do some damage. If you don't want to control him, take him down, dump him, do some damage on his way up, and let him go. Then get back on your bike like you were doing the entire fight. That's the adjustments I would have told him in there. Like, hey, we got to up the output because the rounds are close. We don't know who's going to win this. And I believe one judge even gave it 30-27. So tough fight, man. Pantoja looked good. The one time he did get his takedown. Actually, no, he didn't get the takedown. I think it was like maybe at the end of the round. So I guess you can count that. So I don't know. It was a rough fight to really score in the sense of I don't feel like anyone really won or stood out. Like no one was like, yo, that's definitely the winner. Pantoja was just throwing more, not necessarily landing, but he was just throwing more, looked more busy. But I don't think it was like an uber impressive fight. Obviously, Manel Capé is making his UFC debut and he wanted to impress. And Pantoja couldn't lose to this guy because that could potentially give this guy a title shot right away, who's coming in with a lot of hype from Ryzen. So here we are. Pantoja maintains the dub, the winning streak, I should say. And he's going to transcend his way up the division. So he doesn't have a winning streak. I misspoke. He lost to Askarov, but he got a big win over Capé. Before that, he beat Matt Schnell. And before that, he lost to Davison Figueiredo after being on a three-fight winning streak. Now, this next fight, Benil Dariush versus Diego Figueiredo. Ridiculous fight, back and forth. To me, this was mind-blowing. Both black belts, but Benil Dariush was the better black belt. Now, when you think of Brazilian black belt, you just automatically just go, nah, that guy's like Damian Maia because he's Brazilian. He's got to be the best. Got to be. But that wasn't the case. Wasn't the case at all. And in this situation, he was able to take Diego Ferreira down multiple times and hurt Diego Ferreira into the body with a step-in knee. And Ferreira opted to crouch down and then shoot in on the single leg and look for that deep half guard, but couldn't do anything. It seemed like from that point on, the fate of the fight was pretty much decided. He was able to recover, started to land some damage himself on the feet. Seemed like he was the better striker at that point. I don't know if it's because Benil just started to slow down because he came out of the gate super hard, like he sprinted, but managed to just keep that pace and keep that pressure on Diego Ferreira the entire time. But like I said, I've grappled with Benil. He's got this slow, methodical, pressure passing game and stifling game. When he's on top, he just feels super heavy. He makes sure he stays super heavy. And if you explode or try to give something or try to transition, he takes your back and he's there for a while. Diego Ferreira seems like he's more of that jiu-jitsu gi player. I'm not saying Benil doesn't play in the gi, but I think Diego's more like that half guard, deep half sweep, that type of stuff. And he's probably good with some other stuff as well, but more like gi type of jiu-jitsu where Benil's like MMA grappling, take you down, smash your guard, stay super heavy, stay super tight, wrist control, piss pound you when I can piss pound you, and that's it. Basic, clean, cookie cutter style that you're gonna get every single time, kind of like Khabib does. He takes you down, he's gonna get in those positions, and he's got some tricky arm bars that we've seen him hit on Drew Dober and some other cool submissions as well. But I was just blown away by that. I thought Diego would have edged him out in the grappling department, but that wasn't the case. I gotta look at this fight again because people were saying that there was a big size difference that I didn't notice. So it's hard for me to really say that Diego looks small in there, but I'm gonna take a look again and see if maybe that could be a thing. Maybe Diego needs to go down another weight class if he wants to stay competitive with these bigger guys who are gonna be at 155. And not saying, obviously, if he goes down, he's not gonna be competitive with those guys, but if he wants to be competitive in that top of that, the upper echelon of that division, he might need to go down if that's the case, if he's a smaller fighter. by that much, if it was that noticeable. But we'll see. I mean, Frankie Edgar did it for a while. Obviously, this is a new era. You kind of size advantage is a little bit of a real thing now. And you don't see a lot of smaller guys getting away with being the smaller guy and beating up guys bigger than them. You know, so it's a little bit of a different era. And I love what Benil did, giving a shout out to his guy, Michael. I trained with him when he was out here for Giga Chikadze, and cool dude, Cuban guy, like he says, does not age. He might be 34, whatever it is, but he looks super young. The guy looks like a baby still, like no facial hair, super clean, sick wrestler. I got to drill with him and got to do some kickboxing drilling with him as well. Really tough dude, really nice guy. So hopefully that plea does help. And I also agree with the sentiment that both those guys should have gotten top five opponents, or at least top six. It's kind of messed up, man, that you both work so hard to get these win streaks, and then you got to lose your win streak over a guy who's ranked one or two spots above you. It's just kind of silly to me. Diego Ferreira is 36 years old. At this point, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 wins. He beat Marbek, Taisumov, Ruslan Khabibov. For him to beat those guys and then to lose to a guy like Benil Dariush, who also has a crazy resurgence of a career right now from his loss to Edson Barbosa, says a lot, man. His toughest fight to date for me was this one. And you can make the argument with Drew Dober as well. Those were some crazy fights that he managed to come out on top of. And styles make fights, man. Devontae Smith getting a big win over Justin James. I didn't really get to watch the fight. I was kind of in and out of it. Carol Rosa beats Jocelyn Edwards in her second return in like a few weeks back to the octagon, Jocelyn Edwards. So Carol Rosa gets a good win over her opponent. She is now on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fight win streak in that division. 135. Who else? Yusuf Zalal versus Troy. This was a good fight, man. Now, I know Yusuf. I know Zalal very well. I trained with him a couple times in New York, in Denver, getting ready for a Sunset. Oh, excuse me. And Troy is a tough dude. I didn't realize how good of a fighter he was. He looked like he was just a much bigger man in there. And I remember talking to Yusuf. He says he doesn't cut that much weight to make 145. He can make 35. I believe he has made 35 in the past. But he has such a long frame that he could fight at 145 as he's been doing and have the success as he's been having. I think the difference for guys like this is when he gets into those clean takedown attempts, and he's not finishing, a couple of things, a little bit technical and more so probably the strength and the size. I think he could finish those things if he had a little bit more horsepower behind him, but obviously not everything's gonna go your way. You're not gonna run into a bunch of pushovers. Troy, 28 years old, 6 feet tall, long, lanky, rangy, now on a 2-fight win streak. He also lost to Gavin Tucker, rear naked choke, and lost to Evloev in the UFC. So he's now 2-2. So that's big for him. Zalal likes these short notice fight. He's 24. He's 5'10", 75-inch reach, which is ridiculous. How long was Troy's reach? I forget. 74 and a half. Yeah, so these guys, super long. Like I said, the frames. Now he's lost 2 fights in a row to Troy and Ilya Topura. And before that, he was on a 4-fight win streak. And 3 of those wins were in the UFC, all in super short notice. So, tough fight for him, man, and it sucks. Obviously, you have that 2 losses in a row back-to-back in the UFC is not easy to deal with mentally, but hopefully he can make those adjustments and come back and do some good things. Like I said, I thought Troy looked impressive. He stuffed those takedowns, and then eventually he was able to get some takedowns of his own, and like I said, he was definitely the bigger guy in there. This next fight, Timur Valiyev versus Martin Day. Got to train with both these guys. Martin Day, super tough dude, super technical, nasty with the Taekwondo kicks, 360 spinning roundhouse kicks, stuff like that. Taekwondo hook kicks, side kicks, spinning back kicks from both sides. He's dangerous. Timur Valiyev, super dangerous as well, but now very, very smart in his approach. He didn't go as crazy as he did to impress like he did in his octagon debut against Taven Jones, Tevin Jones, Trevin Jones. That fight was changed to a no contest. I'm not sure why it was changed to a no contest, but he had a crazy big upset. Let's see if it actually showed. But this was a good fight, man. Trevin Jones was getting bullied in there and eventually came back and landed a big, big right hand, left hand from that southpaw position and managed to get the win. Yeah, it doesn't say. I thought it would have said why he lost, why it was overturned, but it doesn't. So big win for him, but good thing he got that turned over. So his win streak still stays alive. He is on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 fight win streak now, beating Chris Gutierrez, Silva, Koga, Magomedov, Da Silva, Costa, and now Martin Day. One of the things I notice about Valiev is his wrestling is very, very strong. He's a super strong dude. And his kicks, his reaction time, he has super fast twitch muscles where he's just like, bing, 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 bing. And he can throw those kicks and get in and out of there super, super fast, man. And then when he shoots in, like I said, he's super strong. Good grappling as well. Super heavy on top. And this was the one thing I thought would have been problematic for Martin Day. I think Martin Day came out to help Frankie Edgar when he fought Yair Rodriguez. So they might have trained together while they were out in New Jersey before. And it seemed like they had a lot of respect for each other. It did look like Timur was on top and not looking to open up with too much ground to pound. It just looked like he just wanted to secure the bag, get the win, and just be dominant, which he was, 30-25. I thought he could have gotten a finish. And again, it might be that respect factor, not trying to beat up a friend like that. And yeah, him taking the fight on short notice and to keep his job intact with the UFC, it's crazy, man. That was his fourth loss in a row. So hopefully the UFC does give him one more chance. Now, Ode Osborne, you got to give this guy a shout out, fighting Jerome Rivera. This was at 145. It made no sense. I don't understand why they were fighting at 145. They could have at least fought at 140, 135. That was a weird one. Jerome Rivera had a very rough entry into the UFC. Had one on the Contender Series, lost to Kelleher, and no, that's the wrong guy. Come on, man. Fuck. Fudge. He had a rough start to this. He won in the Contender Series, then lost three in a row. Tyson Nam, Figueiredo's brother, and now Odd Osborne. And yeah, just, I could imagine that's probably going to be his walking papers, but he did take that on super, super short notice. So maybe the UFC throws him a bone. Hopefully they do. I'd like to see him get one more shot. It's tough though, man. It's, you see these guys like this who won an opportunity, but they perform like that, and then it's tough. But given the circumstances, him taking the fight on super short notice, I can see why they made the fight at 145. And it could be a way for him to get another shot. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is with him in the UFC, but maybe they give him another crack at the flyweight division and see what happens. And for Osborne, man, timing that left hand, picture perfect. The head kick looked like it almost caught him, too. And then he just rolled at the end of it. So his defense was, his hands were down. He got kicked to the shoulder. Sorry, I hope I didn't hit the mic. But yeah, I did. He got kicked to the shoulder. And as he got kicked, he rolled. And from there, he just lined him up. He was had that foot lined up. He was on one foot and just binked straight down the middle and put him out. And yeah, 26 seconds, that was pretty bad. But good performance, the Jamaican sensation. So congrats to him. He won on the UFC's Contender Series, then fought Brian Kelleher in his debut, got guillotine choke in like 2.5 minutes, and then came back big with a huge win in his second UFC appearance, getting a big knockout. He has a lot of first round finishes. Seems like he seems like a well-rounded guy. He's got finishes from both punches. He's got finishes from also submissions as well. He's got a knee bar. No, that was a loss. He's got a triangle choke. He's got rear naked chokes. He's got punches, triangle choke, arm bar. So a lot of these are also in the first round. So it seems like a very, very tough dude and well-rounded. But all right. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'll give you guys a breakdown for the fights later this week for the Usman Burns card. As of right now, I got to get going. As always, if you like my shit, subscribe to my shit, or spinning backflips, baby. Let me know what you think should be next for Corey Sandhagen. Do you think it's title shot or bust? Or do you think he should be fighting somebody else? Let me know in the comments below. I'd love to get back to you guys and jump in the comments with you guys. And let me know what do you think happens for Volkov as well. See you guys next time. As always, stay safe. Peace.
That's the show. You ain't gotta go home, but you gotta get to stepping. And remember, we bring the noise because the people want the funk. Until next time, this is the Weekly Scraps. Bye-bye.